This is the Creative Sports Podcast. My name is Justin Peterson.
And joining me, Darius Thomas.
When you can say, hey, this is why we're doing something, not just, oh, well, I want to do it this way. I think that helps everyone become aligned.
Neelay Shaw is the SVP of Marketing and Brand Strategy for the New York Football Giants. He got a start with the team as an intern and has since helped guide the brand to becoming a digital-first operation. He believes that planning, preparation, and data are essential to success on social.
Okay, awesome. So time that is, let's go on 15. That was perfect.
Hey everyone, welcome to the show. My name is Garrett Wright. Want to start out with a big thank you to APM Music for donating the tracks we use on this podcast. Also, a reminder that this podcast is an extension of the sports creative community on Slack. So if you're hearing this and not a member of that community yet, you should head over to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free.
Excited to have Neelay Shaw here from the New York Football Giants. He's the Senior Vice President of Marketing and Brand Strategy. And we're going to get into a lot of strategy talk, hopefully, incorporating the Eli Manning show that you guys do. But first off, Neelay, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, guys. Justin, I've known you a long time. It's back when you were in the league. It's glad to reconnect. And Darius, nice to meet you as well.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah, from, you know, when I first met you, you've always been forward thinking about how you approach the content space. So I really want to dive in into some of that. Can you first just give us a little background on how you got into sports and maybe what you do today with the Giants?
Yeah, I, you know, growing up, diehard sports fan, particularly about the Giants. You know, it's funny. Sometimes, you know, a lot of people get their break because they know somebody, right? Like it's a connection through somebody. For me, I had nobody. I literally didn't know anybody in sports, had no friends, had no family members who knew somebody whose neighbor it was or anything like that. And back then, and this was, you know, when I was in college back in 2003, you know, there weren't the opportunities that people have now. Like I couldn't LinkedIn someone randomly, or there weren't that many podcasts that you can kind of connect. So, long story short, I, you know, was a diehard user of the Giants website, and they had a fan contest each week. You know, streaming had just started to pick up back then, and you know, every week they would ask a trivia question, and I slowly realized that the answer was within the same story each week, just on a different URL. So before the question was even asked, I already knew the answer, right? So I won this contest, and as part of winning the contest, you got like a prize. Long story short, I turned that whole thing into becoming the first ever intern in the marketing slash website department back then in 2003. And you know, 17 years later, here I am, still here.
So you use your contacts that way? Like when you were reached out to about the prizing, or how'd that come about?
Yeah. So basically, I was supposed to get some type of Giants pin. I never got it. So I emailed the guy and said, hey, I didn't get this. So I think, you know, back then they used to have a yearly fan summit, right? Which was predominantly older people, much older people to come in, talk through about what they liked about the organization, what they may have liked on the content side. So I got my foot in the door that way. I got invited to this little fan summit. I was, you know, I was 18 or 19 at the time, and I begged my way into an internship from the standpoint I was willing to do anything that I could. Back then, you know, digital social wasn't what it is obviously today. So I was the first ever intern in the department. I started working one day a week. I was still in college, flipped my schedule around to take classes at night, and then, you know, started coming in one day a week, turned into 3 days a week. And then I graduated college. I got a job in the city. And then 6 months into it, my boss at the Giants, who had hired me as the intern, left. And because I had been here, they trusted me. I got the full-time job in 2007, and we won the Super Bowl. So it was a pretty interesting little time for me there.
And you've obviously seen the multitude of changes from, you know, the streaming starting back then to now all the television deals. Just kind of talk about that 17-year period of the evolution of broadcast and streaming, as well as digital in that space.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think it certainly has shifted from traditional, you know, a lot of teams were hard, you know, heavy on TV programming. You know, we've shifted a lot of that to digital programming. We're leveraging the platforms, which you can really scale to create content that's native to each one of these platforms. So we place a much bigger emphasis on creating content for YouTube and Instagram Reels than we do for TV. And that's just been the natural evolution throughout those 17 years.
Can we dive into a little bit into how you came about and made those decisions? Because I think a lot of times with organizations like, oh, well, there's this new platform, we have to post to that. And so it becomes easier to take what you've already done on a different platform and just post it on the new platform or whatever. Can you talk about your process of how you approach and maybe even extend into new platforms and evaluate them for whether it works for you and your brand?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, a lot of it is trial and error, but we certainly, you know, the advantage all these digital platforms have are the analytics. So we know on YouTube, if we're on there, that the longer the video is, the longer consumption typically will happen versus Instagram, where we know in the first 3 seconds, we need to hook somebody, otherwise they might drop off, right? So I think the analytics have allowed us to really go into each one of these platforms to figure out, you know, what we want to do. Like on Twitter, you know, we don't typically post a native video there, right? We'll do a short tease, but we'll link out to our YouTube channel to make sure that if someone wants to watch that video in totality, that would be the spot that they would do it versus posting that completely natively on, you know, Twitter or Instagram.
Let's jump into the strategy portion of it. Like, how are you as a department deciding on what energy goes there, what energy goes here, and kind of the week by week strategy of that?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think we are, you know, there's four pillars for us as a department. We're digital first, we're data driven, we're customer focused, and we're revenue focused as well, right? So ultimately, we want to be on platforms that are both driving engagement and revenue for our partners. So, you know, right now for us, Instagram, for example, drives the biggest engagement as it does for most of the team. So when we sit down each week to figure out and map out our content strategy, we know that we need to place a bigger focus on Instagram. And it's not like the old days where, okay, we created a video, let's just take that, you know, mic'd up video and put it up on Instagram. No, we're creating specific content. You know, we're taking a 10-second promo or teaser from that 4-minute video, the highest level of engagement that that portion will get, and posting that on Instagram. So that's a complete team effort from analytics to obviously our social team and to our production team. We are all in a room, you know, sitting down and mapping out, hey, this is our objective. These are the core fans we want to hit. And we will build out our strategy that way.
Can you give us a sense of how your team is built out then? Like, as far as how many social people, how many video people, and like how their job responsibilities are split up and laid out so that you can attack the strategy?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'll give you a little background. So for the first, pretty much up until the last 4 months, we kind of had two different groups. We had digital, creative, social, and then production. So we would work hand in hand in sort of, hey, the digital group or social group needs these videos, let's put them out. But there was a little bit of no overall vision because you still had some of the legacy traditional TV vertical in there. So about 3 months ago, it all kind of blended under me. So now we can have those honest conversations that we want to be digital first. We want to be social first, right? So our social team is laying out the vision to our video group and vice versa in certain ways, in certain platforms. But it's a much more collective effort because there's one vision that, hey, we need to grow these platforms. We need to engage these fans. And that once you have a vision, everyone kind of falls into place knowing that what they're creating has a place in the entire ecosystem of us trying to A, engage the fans, and two, grow the fan base.
As a NFL team that has seen some really good highs and some, you know, some low years, strategically, how do you, from a digital standpoint, not make content just based on the wins and the losses? Or
yeah,
even on the other side, just for revenue? Like, how do you balance all of that?
It's very interesting. In my 15 or 17 year career here, we won 2 Super Bowls in my first 4 years, and we had a winning season, I think, in the first 7, right? So it's really easy to piggyback off of what's happening on the field because there's this natural excitement and the fans want to engage with that content. Unfortunately for us, for the last few years, we haven't had the greatest, you know, performances on the field, But what it's done is it made us really look at kind of how do we leverage the players and their personalities and their profiles to tell their story, where it's not totally about the field. And I think the biggest thing for us is we've gotten pretty aggressive in the lifestyle culture space, where, you know, in the last 2 to 3 years, you know, we mentioned the Eli Manning show, but we're really looking at profiling these players where, you know, listen, if we win, we've set the strategy and we can capitalize. Our numbers are up incredible this year because we're, you know, 7-2. But we can still drive numbers because we're telling stories that the hardcore fan, you know, they'll always love the Giants, but we're resonating with people who might just care about a personality or two. We create content that way. It's not always dependent on wins and losses.
The season obviously takes care of itself. When the off season comes, is there a shift, or is that full planning mode, or like kind of how do you handle the off seasons as well?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think and Justin can relate to this from his sports background as well, is that there is no off season, especially in the NFL. You know, the NFL draft, the combine, training camp, you're as busy planning content as you are during a weekly in-season game schedule. You know, we meet regularly during the season, but really the off season is our time to kind of map out in season, hey, these are the tempo things that we want to accomplish. And ultimately in season, you're a little bit of a cadence, a routine, but you're still looking for ways to capitalize on different moments across our social channels to really get, you know, incredible engagement if you time things up the right way.
Yeah, you started talking about the Eli Manning show and wanting to, you know, get into more of the cultural content. Can you give us a little bit more insight into why you developed that show and, you know, in season two, how has it exceeded your expectations or challenges that you've had to face by rolling that out?
Yeah. I mean, so I'll give you the bigger background. So about 4 years ago, we brought in a new chief business officer who came from the Charlotte Hornets. He was a COO there reporting into Jordan. And really, he kind of challenged us to think of our brand not as just a football team, right? We're in the biggest market in the country. We're in New York City. How can we kind of become a bigger entertainment brand, right? So really started to look at the content that we were developing. We did a partnership with Marvel, which was the first time an NFL team really did something as big as we did there. But really, the Eli show came about. We brought Eli back into the organization 2 years ago. Once he retired, we knew he needed to be a part of the organization. So we, you know, really leveraged him from a fan engagement standpoint and also a business development standpoint. And we realized, you know, we didn't want Eli to sit there and break down film and talk about the current team. He became a natural, you know, a national figure through the Manning cast and some of those other things. So we said, hey, let's use Eli as a conduit to all of these influencers and celebrities who love the Giants, who might not be open to just talking to a regular talent on the Giants website, right? How can we leverage Eli to break through with those personalities? And we didn't really know how it was going to do, but season one was awesome. The guests that we started to get, like, you know, we had Kevin Hart, Kevin Durant, Jesus Romero, Bill Murray, and really cast of The Sopranos, it really kind of became more than anything we could have expected. The season two, where we think we're bigger and better, we got Ryan Reynolds for the first episode. We just did a whole thing with Fabio, which blew up on the internet, where we put Eli into the studio with Fabio and they created a track. And that post was our most liked Instagram post at 350,000 likes, more than any time we win a game. The only post to beat that out in our history was when Eli Manning retired. So it came kind of full circle. But yeah, I mean, this is the type of stuff that's resonating with our fan base. And, you know, we wanted to live at the intersection of entertainment and sports. And that show, you know, really hit that. And the numbers, I think last season we had 40 million impressions, which, you know, nothing we do on the football side ever reaches that. And we're hoping to continue to grow upon it and get some big name guests and really, you know, create more programming that's in a similar mindset.
Yeah, you spoke about the intersection of entertainment and business, right? How vital is that, not just in the NFL, but in all sports, college sports, professional leagues, to now take that leap to merge those two things in together?
Yeah, I mean, it's huge. And I think ultimately, you know, from a revenue standpoint, and when you're dealing with sponsors, that's the type of stuff that they want, right? They want content that speaks to different types of audiences, not just a hardcore football fan. And the more you can kind of develop things that reach a wider audience, where, to your point, it's not totally dependent on what happens on the field. You know, I go out on these sponsor pitches, and the first thing they say, it used to be signage, now it's content, right? So are you creating content that can A, deliver from an impression standpoint, but also resonate with a wide audience that hits different demos?
Yeah, I want to get into the sponsor stuff in a minute, but I want to stick with the Eli Manning show a little bit longer. So was the business person that came over from the Hornets really driving a lot of this thought process to go big with it? Or how do you ideate for that show starting from season one and to now?
Yeah, I mean, really, it was his vision from the standpoint of, you know, not every team has a national personality that can bring on national guests, right? So like to my point earlier, if you have a talent on your team website, Kevin Hart or Kevin Durant probably isn't, if you put in a request to interview him, probably may not, you know, ever get to do that, right? But with Eli, his relationships, his national status, it's a much easier conversation, right? And once they realized that we wanted them to come on to talk about their stories, why they loved the Giants or why they were a professional athlete, a professional music artist, it was a much easier ask. And really, yeah, it was his vision, and we took it and we said, hey, we want to hit three different verticals. We wanted music, we wanted fashion, and we wanted entertainment. And we just put a list together, started in season one with who were Giants fans, right? Like Tracy Morgan's a Giants fan, right? Let's try and get him on because he crosses off all those boxes. And then we kind of, you know, as we went through season two, we said, hey, we can actually get big name stars. Like Ryan Reynolds is a huge star, and that video has, like, I think right now 300,000 views. That would never, none of our best like sights and sounds after a win gets like 50 to 75,000, right? So I think it's a credit to Eli that he's built up this national following through all the things he's done on the side too. But obviously from a Giants internal production standpoint, we were lucky to have him be a part of the team.
How much of it is premeditated as far as when you go into a shoot, how much is scripted kind of versus how much is unscripted, and what are you trying to get out of each shoot? Do you have like, yeah, hey, we need to get three reels out of this, or do you see what happens and then clay off of it?
Yeah, man, this is a credit to our production team who spends hours in strategy to figure out kind of what the stories are for each one of these guests. But from a high level, you know, standpoint, yes, we definitely go in and say, hey, listen, this is a YouTube show. We want to hit, let's just say, over 10 minutes if it makes sense, just because we know consumption is longer if you get a longer video on YouTube. But ultimately, our social media person is on every one of those shoots. So she will go on there to create either custom content or be able to pick out points within the show that she knows that she can leverage for social. So, you know, you go back to what has changed in 17 years, most likely in the early days of social media, that person is not going on that shoot, right? That's a traditional director and the producer or whatever you may have, it's shoot editors, shooters. Now the social team is integrated into that thought process. So from the start, we know that social is as important as whatever the final full video may be. But I would say, you know, and again, total credit to them, you know, all the storylines and stuff are thought out beforehand. But obviously, when you're in the live element, you know, Eli can, you know, take it any which way that he wants to go.
Let's stick with Eli for a second. I'm a little biased as an Ole Miss grad, but
nice.
Having been around him pretty much his entire career, is this funny, charismatic part a new Eli, or has he always been that type of character around the facility?
Yeah, he, again, I've been here. The first day I started working was when Eli got drafted in April of 2004. If you ask the players in the locker room, and I think a lot of his stories have come out once he retired, he was the biggest prankster in the locker room, right? So what you saw on the football field was, you know, the elite Eli, you know, completely focused, and obviously off the field has to be focused. But he's always been known amongst his peers in the locker room to be a prankster and to really joke with the guy. So his personality that you see on whether it's, you know, Eli's Places or the Manning Cast or our show, that's organic. That's natural. People are just getting to see the real him in a non-serious football, you know, environment.
So you have the Eli Show. Are there more of those type of shows that you could see coming down the pike, having seen the success of this particular show?
100%. We're already brainstorming a lot of different ideas going into next year. That's really going to even place more focus on this lifestyle, entertainment, cultural genre, because we just know the numbers, you know, resonate more than some of the hardcore football stuff, which we'll always do, right? We always need to create the coaches shows and the mic'd ups and the sights and sounds, because all hardcore fans want that. But if we're looking at, you know, attracting the next generation of fans, we know we have to do some of this other stuff.
That starts to get a little bit into more strategy and sponsorship. And one thing that, as you were talking before, that interested me is trying to sell sponsors or get sponsors attached to some of this content. And how are you involved in that process and in a sense selling it to them, selling the vision?
Yeah, and I think you know, in speaking with a lot of my peers, I think I'm much more on that side of it than maybe some of the others. You know, I've always had an interest in strategy and revenue and generating revenue, things like that. So, you know, for us, we sell content, right? Like, we are a content house is what we kind of see ourselves as, right? And I think what COVID did was it accelerated what we all knew was coming anyway, is that you can reach a lot more people on these platforms than you can typically with in stadium signage, which, let's just say 15 years ago, that was probably the main, that and TV were probably the main elements of a sponsorship deal outside of, you know, use of marks, right? What these platforms have done is the sponsors, can now track the performance of these assets, right? But also, they know if they want to reach a wider demographic, hit a younger demo, they know social and digital is where they need to be. So really, when we do our first discovery session with the sponsor, and usually I go in on some of the bigger ones, you know, we'll first hear what they are interested in, what demos they're trying to reach, and we will try to create or at least match up content that we have planned with what their objectives end up being. And that's when things don't become like, hey, they're just putting a logo in your face and that's what it is. But, you know, like for the Eli Show, as an example, like Dunkin' is a partner of ours. You'll see coffee cups on set, right? Like, that's a natural integration for that Eli Manning show. But it works, right? So it's our job to try and find these authentic integration points. And that process is, you know, discovery, going on the pitch, and, you know, really putting together platforms that make sense for these sponsors.
In your position, how do you determine what is successful and what's not? And what you want to keep doing and what you want to kind of transition out of?
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, we go back to it. The four core pillars are digital first, and the second one is data driven, right? We constantly look at numbers to evaluate whether something is performing well or not. And I'll give you an example. We did a feature for a sponsor that wasn't performing that well, took a lot of resources, you know, it wasn't doing great on YouTube. We went to the sponsor. We said, hey, listen, we have an alternative that's performing much better from an engagement standpoint, whether it's views or likes or comments. It still made sense for them in what they were trying to achieve. We were able to switch them out. It made the sponsor happy, and it created, you know, less work is not the right word for it, but in theory, if we were not doing something that's not performing well, it allows us to use resources to create additional content that could potentially do better for partners, right? So that ultimately is an everyday thing. Like, our social media team is constantly looking at metrics and numbers. And the NFL has done a great job of really, you know, challenging teams to consistently look at that stuff to try and create best in class processes.
How involved are you? I mean, do you take that to the sponsorship team and say, hey, this isn't performing that well, we'd like to explore and like let them lead that conversation? Or do the sponsors sometimes come to you? And I mean, in my experience, it seemed like it took a little bit for sponsors to come around to an idea. So the fact that you're giving them the, you know, the data and the statistics saying this is going to improve our, you know, your visibility, I'm curious to hear how that process works for you.
Yeah, we're much more aggressive with it, right? So like we try to get ahead of that type of situation, right? So like we're monitoring these things on a weekly basis or daily basis, whatever the future calls for. If we get a sense that this is not performing to like what our benchmark kind of, hey, this is not doing well, we will start those conversations with our account management team, who will then take it to the sponsor, right? And sometimes we have to get involved to explain it, but typically when we show them, hey, if you switch over to this piece of content, which is performing much better, you know, the numbers don't lie. And from their perspective, unless it's a complete different off-brand kind of suggestion, it's a win-win for both parties, right? And I think they appreciate that we're looking to create the best assets for them. And I think a lot of times what they're used to is, hey, I have a 30-second TV spot. I don't have the production budget to go and make a new commercial spot. So we're just going to let this thing run. But now on digital and creating content on the fly with the social team or the digital team, we can easily create new concepts, right? It's not I'm stuck in, you know, TV land where I've put budget towards all of this commercial. I have to use that creative here. We can go out and change that creative.
Do you find as you're beginning to pitch sponsors, if they're looking for something, do you test out content or are you always iterating, trying to try new stuff to see what works on your platforms first before you try and sell it to a sponsor?
It's typically us ideating things that we want to do, and then the sponsor will come after that. Right. So we're, I would say, probably one season ahead, and we will basically roll out content, see how it performs. So we have some tangible number to go back out with to the sponsor. Say, hey, listen, we created this piece. This is what we're getting, average impression, average engagement. We think that we can continue this and the rate of engagement will stay the same. It's a good fit for you guys. And that's where, again, like what I tell my crew is the more you're involved on the sponsorship end, you can have those conversations, right? Because I think traditionally what used to happen, and you probably felt this, right, is that sponsorship group sold X without involving the digital team, and then it became kind of a clash. Here, if we're involved in the process, then we can't go back and say, hey, you know what? I don't want to post that on social. If we're the ones creating and suggesting the pieces of content, it makes a much better situation and environment.
100% agree with that. I guess the other challenge then, though, is that if you're producing the content up front, do you ever get to a point where your team runs out of bandwidth to produce new content because of all the sponsorships that are sold for the current season, and you kind of run out of time that you would like to have to produce new content for future sales opportunities?
Yeah, I think ultimately, different types of content have more leeway, right? Like if it's a video series, we know that resources might be, you know, tied up and creating something new on the fly isn't practical. But let's just say, you know, the biggest thing for us is we were dead last. And this is like a practical example. We were dead last or in the bottom five in our photo consumption for years, right? Having no cheerleaders, we did studies like the teams with cheerleaders inherently had a higher or a mascot and they inherently had more photo consumption. We spent a lot of time reimagining kind of what we're doing in that space and creating photo series and things like that on social and our website is an easier lift than it is to go out and create a video series, right? So if a sponsor comes to us, we'll tell them, hey, these are the options we have in an immediate standpoint that we can align you with. But if you want a video series, it has to wait to whatever the production timeline may be.
Let's talk staff for a second. How do you... it's kind of a multi-part question. How do you look to fill your staff, like when you're hiring someone, and how much work-life balance do you try to push with your staff to incorporate in their time working in the NFL?
Yeah, the first one is, and this is what I always say, right? Like everyone, if they're applying for a job in this space, has some technical expertise, right? Like you can tell right away whether someone's a good editor or shooter, etc., right? The hardest thing for someone to kind of grasp in sports is how much team, you know, how much being a part of the team is important in a sports environment, right? Like just because you're the social media person doesn't mean you can't suggest something on the video end or vice versa, right? So to me, the first thing in an interview, I always try to figure out how much of a team player the person is, and that's through you can kind of get a sense of how they are working with other people, you know, in a few interviews, obviously checking in on references. But to me, that's really the biggest thing. I will take somebody who's a team player. You know, if two things are all equal, if it's someone that's more proficient technically versus someone who has a good technical background but is really a team player, I will always take the person who's a team player over the technical person. And then the second part of it is ultimately, you know, what's really changed for us is we're all one unit now, right? So it's easier for me to be able to pick and choose, hey, we're missing this piece on a staff, to go out and find somebody to kind of fit that role.
Obviously, branding, strategy, all that is, you know, it's fun. What's been one of the most favorite things that you've worked on in your 17 or so years working with the team?
Yeah, I mean, I've been fortunate. We've done some cool things. I mentioned, obviously, we talked about Eli. We did a Marvel partnership this year. We launched our legacy uniforms, which I think we kind of did it unlike any other team, where it was a fully integrated, you know, platform. But to me, you know, about 10 years ago, a new technology, which is pretty, you know, fervent now, augmented reality. I saw something. Barnes & Noble did some augmented reality thing that no one had really heard about. And I said, hey, this is a really cool technology. How can we use it? So after our 2011 Super Bowl win, I created, in partnership with this company, Gold Run, the ability for our fans to wear our Super Bowl rings. More recently, you've probably seen the Warriors did something similar to that. But 10 years ago, no sports team had ever used augmented reality. So, you know, in that instance, we were able to take something, and we had 45,000 people download our app. If you go on Google and type in Giants virtual Super Bowl ring, you'll see all these fans wearing this Super Bowl ring. And we brought something to a fan base that they would, in any other situation, have no ability to experience. You know, that Super Bowl ring is sacred. It goes to the players. But they were able to take their photo with it. And, you know, we really merged technology with sports and created an experience that allowed fans to, you know, experience what the players were experiencing.
How do you make time for R&D? And what is there a process to it? Or is it just a, you know, you're following a path of interest?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think a lot of that is, and I mentioned on the augmented reality thing, is really what it comes down to is that, you know, you're looking at what other teams, other brands, other industries are doing and figuring out, hey, is that a way for us to take something that they're doing and putting our spin on it? And ultimately, it's our job to continually look at all these brands and all these industries to try and find these technologies. And again, a lot of it is trial and error, right? Like, in addition to that thing, like, we were the first team, it's crazy to think about it, to put tweets on game broadcast. Like, I had no idea whether people would care or whatever, but like, I saw there was a show, a music show on TV where they let people vote and you could see their comments on the bottom of, you know, the screen. I said, you know what, let's bring that to the NFL. Fans obviously care about the team. And we rolled in tweets on game broadcast. There was no benchmark whether something would be successful or not. A lot of it is trial and error, and you see if it resonates and then you keep it going. And if it doesn't, you get rid of it. So R&D really comes down to looking at what other people do. And I really like to look at stuff outside of sports as a way to really, you know, change the game in sports.
It's interesting you say that, because I was just about to ask, where do you find your inspiration to incorporate things in the sports world?
Yeah, it's just looking across the board and seeing, you know, all these different, you know, whether it's SBJs or front office sports or, you know, billboard or whatever it may be, just researching, looking and seeing what brands are doing in the music space and how can we incorporate. Like this past year, the first time ever, we have celebrity DJs, right? So like DJ Envy, who's a huge Giants fan, on The Breakfast Club, we had him DJ a game and we're in talks about potentially doing some content together, right? So like, how do you kind of find these stories and bring them together? And it's just, you know, research, and hopefully you find something that clicks.
All right. So for the individuals who may be in college or early in this field, what would be some sound advice that you would offer them of how to get into sports? Not necessarily get where you are, but yeah, to get into professional sports.
Yeah, to me, the biggest advantage kids have are two things, right? Like LinkedIn, as an example, easy way to blindly reach out to people, know what they do. And, you know, like I admittedly never answer every single request that comes out to me just because there's a lot on LinkedIn, but I will answer some when I get some time to do it. Right. So I didn't have that opportunity way back 17 years ago. Right. Like I didn't have a way of randomly emailing someone or sending a message on LinkedIn or through social media. So continue to do that. Right. Cause you never know who you're going to get in contact with. And the second thing is internships. You got to figure out a way to do internships and get some practical experience because that really makes a difference. I mean, I did 3 years at the Giants unpaid and I was the first ever. There was no, you know, road that, hey, if you do this internship, it's going to turn into a job. But if I hadn't done those 3 years, there's no way that I would have gotten that full-time gig. They knew me, they trusted me, they knew I worked hard. And I was able to kind of make it happen. And the other thing is, you know, if you're in production or creative, you have as good a chance of making something go viral as someone who works in sports, right? All these platforms allow people to get their content out. So if you're a creator, publish that content, create a feed, create things so people can see your work. And when, you know, you go on a resume, you don't need to show words on a resume, right? Here's my portfolio. Here's my reel with some real numbers on it. And you should be able to take advantage of that because, again, we never had any of that stuff when we were just starting out.
You mentioned earlier about hiring a good teammate over somebody that just had good skills. You prefer the good teammate.
Yeah.
Are there any other skills that you think or that you've seen younger people have that surprise you or stand out?
I mean, I think being a good teammate, obviously, on the, you know, being creative is obviously important, right? But I think the more people who understand the business side of things, it's a huge leg up, right? Like someone who understands sponsorship from the standpoint of the content that I'm creating has to resonate with a wide audience for people to have interest in these things. That's a huge leg up, right? Like just because you're in, you know, you're the website manager, you should want to understand how they're selling things, right? And I think the next level of CMOs and senior executives are coming from this space, right? Because they are, if you're in digital, you're involved in every aspect of the organization, right? Like I work with PR, I work with CR, I work with PR, you know, like business comms, right? It's the central kind of focus of every organization is digital, right? So the more you can understand how numbers work and how data works, that's going to play a big role in how far you can advance as you work through your career.
Being in the Jersey, New York area, obviously also have another team that you share a facility with. Is that an advantage having that much access to, like, you know, going back to the Eli and Fabio and Kevin Durant and,
yeah.
Like, does that help you guys or does that make it more challenging because, you know, some people may be looking for more out of you than you may be looking to get out of you?
No, I think being in this market is a huge advantage, right? Getting the celebrity and artists who may already be in the New York area doing whatever they may do it is a huge leg up than potentially being somewhere, let's just say centrally located where they might not come through, right? So ultimately, we use the market to our advantage. I mean, our market, like 27 million people are in the market, right? Like we have access to all these people. If we create content that, you know, goes beyond the love of just what happens on the field, we have the ability to generate some serious numbers just because of the, you know, our population in this area, right? So it's our job to continue to look at that and leverage that being a positive for us and use it as an asset and a differentiator against other markets that we compete with.
Is there any data or perspective that you can shed on that? You just talked about the business being an important part. What do you look for when you're looking at data? Because there's so many different touch points that you can evaluate.
I mean, ultimately for us, when we report against or when we're doing pitches, it's two things, right? Like our follower growth and total, you know, in our ecosystem of followers, that's a good touch point. And then obviously total engagements, right? Like to me, impressions, you know, you can generate impressions because you get lucky, one video went viral, right? But like, are your engagements per post up? That's something that we look at a lot, right? Like year over year, are we creating more content that resonates with our fan base that they're wanting to engage with? So So those are typically the two that I would put into a sponsored deck to show, hey, this is our growth. This is how we're performing against other teams. Because, I mean, let's be honest, the team that has a million followers versus, let's just say, our 2.5 on Instagram, if you're not looking at it by per post, then obviously we would, just by pure scale, you know, be able to have more engagements, right? But you really got to level the playing field to figure out whether your content's working or not.
I love that perspective. Because, I mean, I think a lot of teams would say, well, these are just the round numbers to generate sales, right?
Yeah, no. I mean, listen, you can, you know, the thing with numbers is you can tell any story the way you want to tell the story. But at some point, if it's not the right story, it'll come back to bite you.
To stay on the data point is, how do you try not to just focus on how many clicks or how many engagements and actual, like, impact?
Yeah.
Like what types of content actually like slides you in that direction versus what went viral or got 300K likes?
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, again, we want to hit a wide variety of demos with our content, right? So ultimately, just knowing what the content is about kind of shifts that way. But like, I'll give you an example, like on YouTube, right? Like we saw that if we created, and I'll use Eli as an example because I go back and forth with our lead producer on that, is on YouTube, if you don't get to what the crux of the video is in the first 3 seconds, we had tremendous drop off, right? So like traditional on YouTube, you know, traditional storytelling, you want to kind of build it up and get to it, maybe a little bit into it. But we kind of saw we had a dramatic drop off in the first 10 seconds, let's just say, because we weren't getting to the point, right? So I told our guy, hey, if we're doing an interview, either show the person who we're interviewing immediately in that first 3 seconds, or do whatever you got to do in the first 3 seconds and then get to the point. Because I think attention spans are so short right now that you want to be able to capture people and their attention. And I think they decide right away whether they're sticking onto a video or not. And the minute we did that, the average length of viewership in our videos went up, right? Like the minute we got more into what the interview was about, it became the person was willing to sit through the interview longer. So you'll see it on, if you go to like the Eli show, if you compare like maybe season one to season two, in season two, we cut right to the interview into most cases. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll definitely link to the show and share any other links that you have with anybody.
Sounds good.
Yeah. It's good to get more into the strategy of stuff.
Yeah. That's the one thing like for me early on, like, I don't, you know, like to me, where the, and again, I know Justin, you're into it, but like the hardcore about the production, I never really cared about, like in the weeds on the production, where production fits into the grand scheme of an integrated marketing campaign always appealed to me more, right? So like, you know, we did this uniform launch, right? And like most teams just roll out a uniform. If you look at how we did it, like, you know, we brought back these uniforms from the 80s and 90s. We said, how can we blow this up, right? So production focused on creating the video, but we focused on, you know, we painted our end zones like they did from the 80s. We brought DJ Clark Kent, who's a famous DJ from the area, to play the game. We had Tone Loc and Naughty by Nature at halftime performing, right? Like, how do you create this totally integrated campaign? How do you sell it? Like, we had a sponsor on it, right? That always interested me more than really the, you know, in the weeds production standpoint. And some people just care solely about the production, right? And they don't care about all those other things. But in my opinion, you know, as you build out a team, the top person needs to have that in mind. And then you find experts in each one of these areas.
When would you say that the shift started to happen to start, you know, going back to the integration of business and entertainment, sports nationwide?
You know, the people who I give credit to, the NFL, you know, the NFL brought in a new CMO who really, they redid a lot of their, you know, what their function was, I think, like, you know, like the demos they were going after and things like that. And they really set the tone for the teams, right? Like if you look at NFL marketing, their influencer marketing is awesome, right? Like they're doing brand commercials with the biggest, and honestly, Fabio, who we got, was in the NFL brand campaign, right? And that's where we found out he was a Giants fan, and you know, we kind of made that relationship, you know, through a different avenue. But you know, if he's starring in an NFL commercial with Giants with a Saquon jersey on, he needs to be associated with the Giants on the team level, right? And I think the NFL, you know, credit to them, they've really upped their game on the marketing front, and it's really resonated down to the teams. And again, like, you have to be in the right market for it to work. You know, we're fortunate we're in New York, and you know, just organically, the intersection of entertainment and sports and lifestyle is in our backyard, right? And I don't think we've done a good enough job in capitalizing that. And when Pete, who's our head of business, came through 4 years ago, he made it a focal point, and me and him are completely aligned vision wise that I'm able to kind of understand his vision and bring it to life.
Just hearing you talk about all the different parts of the production, social, digital space that you are leading, it makes me think of all the time and planning that goes into it. And you have to have a lot of lead time in order to pull off sponsorship, to pull off working with celebrities. So can you give us a little insight into what that planning process looks like and how far ahead you are on your planning?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I would like to think we could get better at it, but, you know, the Eli Manning show, we're typically like 3 to 4 weeks in advance of whatever the next guest is going to be. So we already have 3 episodes in the can for the next three, whatever we're off for, you know, for the next 3 weeks, right? So, you know, we work through both bookers, our internal resources, the NFL. That show in particular, you know, we try and get ahead of, just because coordinating talent on that show is really difficult. And in season, like I said, a lot of our planning is done in the off season. So let's just say 6 months in advance, we will map out, you know, 30 to 40 pieces of content, dwindle it down, say, hey, this is what we want to try. And then we'll get the, you know, okay from football ops if it's football related, and PR if there's anything that we need to check in. And then we just go out and we execute.
And then when it comes down to decisions made on the fly, something happens, whether it's in game or as part of the shoots or, and stuff, is there a review process? Do you have approvals up the chain for to rumble stuff? Are you the approval? How does that work?
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you one practical example that I don't know if every team does it, because I would ask. So like during game day on social, right, there's always a million opportunities to capitalize on different moments. And, you know, in real time, it's tough, right, because there's a million things going on. So what we did like 3 years ago is we create a caption bank, right? So we have a caption ready for every player in an Excel file. That's ready to go depending on if what that player does. So like for Saquon, we'll have, you know, witty captions, we'll have different things, whether it's a catch, a run, or even if he throws the ball. And that's all in a master Excel sheet. And even our like post-game win captions are decided all by Wednesday. So we all sit down, social team will go first, our head of digital will review it, and then I'll be the final kind of look at just to say, hey, there's nothing in here that crosses the line. But we've gotten much better at pre-planning a lot of the moments. Like all these, you know, the biggest thing for teams right now are these post-game graphics, right? Whether you're using memes or whatever it may be. Like that is all decided on by Wednesday, Thursday of this week. So everything that we have going for the game. And if there's anything questionable, I'll go to our head of business. And there's been times where he shot it down just because it toes a little bit too aggressive. But we're typically kind of aligned on what we think will fly.
Proactive approach. I like that.
It's helped our numbers, right? Like in the moment, if we already have 5 captions, depending on how the game goes, that we know are going to hit, because they need to be witty, the days of just saying final score are long gone, then there's no debate in the moment. Hey, here's what we're going to know. We've already agreed ahead of time. Let's roll with it, and we're good to go.
That's awesome. I mean, I think so often it becomes we just have to react in the moment, and yeah. I think that's where you can definitely get in trouble or have some arguments. And so I love that you're pre-planning all that stuff and making it happen.
1,000%. We were getting into situations where, hey, we need to ask somebody if this is too edgy, and by that time it was already too late, right? So everything is pre-planned, and you know that Excel sheet's like, got a lot on it, and then it's up to the social team to decide what they want to do. But overall, it's all approved, so there's no issue on anyone's end that hey, this might cause some issues.
Is there anything else like that that you've come across that you've run into issues and are like, okay, well, we need to solve this going forward, or for next year, this is how we should improve this to make everyone's life easier and make sure that we're not crossing any company lines?
I mean, that to me is usually social is usually the biggest one, just because of captions and all that stuff. We haven't really had anything. I mean, we're pretty tight with our PR, so you know, a lot of the stuff we keep them in the loop as well, so there's no opportunity for there to be any miscommunication. But I would say social is doing that whole Excel thing got us past the point of any debate and anything that could be deemed controversial or mistaken for controversial, because a lot of that's opinion, right? You may find one thing that's a little bit edgy where I may say, hey, that, like, to me, that's fine. But if it's all been debated and discussed beforehand, then you're good to go.
Last question I'll ask. How do you make sure that the morale is high for your staff?
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's, you know, ever since I took over, you know, kind of all functions of the marketing department here, you know, these all on hand meetings where I show what's working and what's not and really highlight what's working. And if it's not working, here's a tweak to kind of make it work or ask for people's suggestions. I'm all about making sure everyone feels like they're a part of it, right? So like, to me, like this legacy thing, you know, that we did, I made sure that everyone knew that no matter how minor of a role you may have played in it, like it still played a role in making an integrated campaign. And to me, I'm always about making sure everyone feels like they had a hand in whatever project that we had. And I think they appreciate that and they understand that there's no egos involved. Like, you want to do what's best for the Giants. Like, I could care less if my name is in the newspaper or anything. It's my job to make sure whoever's above me, make them look good, right? Like, how do we create this environment where everyone's always trying to make someone else look better, but collectively doing what's right for the Giants, right? And I think ultimately people appreciate there's no ego. And listen, you tell them what's working and you tell them what's not. And you tell them when it's not working, as long as they know you have a strategy on helping to make it better, then I think they'll respect it.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives. If you're enjoying this podcast, we'd love it if you shared it with a friend or a coworker and leave us a 5-star rating so other people will be able to find us as well. And don't forget to subscribe so that you're the first person to catch each new episode. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.